Welcome to the Healthy Paranoia Repertory Theater's production of Hamlet, Prince of Cybersecurity. In the role of Hamlet will be Mrs. Y. Desdemona will be played by Sir Joseph of Klein, with Dame Wendy Nather as Gertrude. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern will be portrayed by J. James and Grex, respectively, with the Fool, of course, played by Greg Farrow. To CISSP or not to CISSP? That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of DOD 8570 noncompliance, or to take arms against a sea of human resource recruiters and by opposing end them, to expire, to renew no more, and by expiration to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that InfoSec is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished. To expire, my CISSP, to expire, perchance to lose my clearance. Aye, there's the rub. For in that expiration of death, what consequences may come? Welcome, fair maids and handsome gents, to another episode of Healthy Paranoia, where we've gathered a merry band of security professionals, and Greg, to discuss the double-edged sword of certifications. Sitting with me at the virtual round table is the much-loved IPv6 fanatic and scientific hooligan Joe Klein, that darling of droll Wendy Nather, the omnipresent Grex of NovaInfosec.com, the enigmatic J. James, and, of course, Greg Farrow. Hey, everybody.
Wow.
Hello.
Nice.
Let's give a round of applause for that intro.
That was just beautiful. That was... I'll be right with you.
Shakespeare and security.
Oh, it seems somewhat
it had the ring of truth.
Are you spent?
Yes, I am. I am. So
that's
let's...
awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Bring it on, because I want to take the CISSP apart.
Uh-oh. Oh, God. It's not like you need Greg. You need an excuse for Greg, right?
No.
Well, let's go into some more detail for people who may not be familiar. I have a couple of new people online. I don't think Joe needs any description at all. Everybody knows Joe Klein. But Wendy Nather, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, thank you. I'm Wendy Nather. I am research director for the Enterprise Security Practice at 451 Research. And the way I like to explain is that I used to do stuff for a living, and now I just talk to people who do stuff for a living, and I write down what I think of it.
That's great. That's incredible. And J. James, you're very new to the podcast. We've never had you on the show before, but you sounded interested and intrigued about the conversation we were having. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you. I'm a recent transplant to Maryland from San Diego, and I might be uniquely positioned to discuss this kind of topic because I spent a lot of time in the past couple of years out of work going through millions of job interviews and being rejected for the fact of not having a CISSP or some kind of certification overall. But I'm glad to be out here in Maryland. I'm doing ANA work now, but thanks for having me on the podcast.
Awesome. And of course, Grex, I have been dying to have you on the podcast forever because you're quite when I said you're omnipresent, that really is accurate because you have the wonderful Nova InfoSec portal, which everybody sort of swears by. You also do ShmooCon Fire Talks, which I love. What else do you work on that I may not be aware of?
Well, I mainly spend my days coding in Microsoft Word and PowerPoint. So, AKA, I am doing cybersecurity paperwork drills mostly. So, at night, I continue to write, and I also like to do a little bit of hands on stuff, and I write about those experiences as well.
Yeah, you do some great talks. Basically, you're kind of like all of us. The dirty little secret of people who have podcasts and blogs is that we do that so that we can learn stuff. And
you
do some great presentations where you learn stuff and you tell people, hey, this is how I did this. And I think that's great. It's laudable. And, of course, we have Greg. Greg, you have been recently – it's interesting because you've been also head of security to some degree, or you've been working on security for a cloud company. Is that correct?
That's correct. I am what they call the cloud plumber is my official job title. Because somebody's got to look after the shit.
What happens when it gets backed up?
You're the roto router.
The roto router. Well, my primary role is to manage the networking and the security portfolios for the office of the CTO for Canopy Cloud. And we are prototyping a early stage cloud at scale and working our way through the process. So it all sounds very grandiose, but in reality, there's a small team of very talented people, far smarter than me, coming up with all sorts of great ideas for how we build clouds. And I hold the security portfolio while we go through the prototyping phase and make sure that it holds together. I have a team of people doing the more security down the bottom, but my job is to lead the focus of converging the security and the infrastructure together.
And I can't help myself. Does it support IPv6, unlike most other clouds?
No, it won't.
Just checking.
Okay, Joe.
There's no need for IPv6, okay? We have NAT. Is that another
The challenge here is you can only build so much at a given point in time. So we're coming from a limited amount of we can only build so much at a given point in time. So the goal today is to put IPv6 on the roadmap, and we will probably handle IPv6 using Lisp and use that to provide an overlay over IPv4 in the short term. And then in the long term, when we've got time to automate the IPv6 deployments, then we'll move to that. The biggest problem we have, of course, is that most of the automation platforms don't support IPv6. Let's just assume that infrastructure is getting there, but by far and away, it's the automation tool sets that we use don't have IPv6 support yet.
I agree. I've already tested a lot of them.
Okay, Joe. I was so worried. I thought Joe was going to go get his weapons and everything when you said that.
He's going to go full metal Fez on us.
I know. That's right. He did have that Fez at Fire Talks. It was hysterical. Okay. Well, let's talk about the reason for this podcast episode on CISSP. Obviously, I've already given it away, but it was this great. The impetus for it was a great post by Wendy Nather about whether or not she was going to renew her CISSP. And for those of you, I put the link in the notes, and I'm going to put it in the show notes as well. But for those of you who haven't read it, I mean, it sounds very similar to not just the CISSP certification and what people go through in whether or not to renew it, but some of the same things I hear from other certs as well. I've even heard this about the CCIE. So, Wendy, why don't you talk a little bit about your post and some of the things that went on in your head when you were composing this?
Well, actually, I confess that not much of anything was going on in my head at the time, which is probably what led to all this kerfluffle. I just remember thinking, God, I haven't posted on my personal blog in a long time. I really should do something. What's at the top of my mind? Oh, yeah, I just got that renewal email. I don't think I'm going to renew. I think I'll just write something about that. And so, honestly, I did not expect it to be picked up as much as it was. I certainly didn't mean to hurt the feelings of some very fine people I know who work for ISC Squared or with ISC Squared. But it was just my honest assessment of why am I, paying more than $80 to, for pretty much nothing. From my side, I'm certainly not saying that CISSP is useless and in all cases that it's a crap certification or anything like that. Just at my advanced age, after 30 years in the industry, I just don't feel as though I'm going to go after the sort of jobs that might require it. And even if I did, the fact that I did hold it at some point, I think, it should probably be sufficient. So that was really all I had in mind.
So you've been in the industry since you were 10. Greg, there are some questions that have come up about, you and Ivan and the CCIE, which are somewhat similar. You've both been in the industry a very long time, and whether or not it makes sense for you to go through the entire stuff that comes with renewing a CISSP. I mean a CCIE.
Yeah, the CCIE is a little bit different. It's a certification that involves every time you research about 250 hours of study to come back up to speed every 2 years, because you tend to fade out on a lot of stuff because you don't use most of it. And it's a very detailed certification in terms of things like OSPF and being able to identify a type 4 LSA. It's not sort of wafty stuff. Like CISSP is kind of like lock the doors, close the windows, draw the curtains, pay attention to details, have a process, knock yourself out. It's not exactly a high level of competency, really. It's about, you know, you've actually done the basics, about what I would call a first-year apprentice for a 17-year-old for security.
but Bella Padma.
I thought that was the Security Plus, no?
No, so but there is.
That's a high school. That's the high school.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
But you have those ongoing credits that you have to maintain. I think that's Wendy, wasn't that the problem, that maintaining those what are they called, the CISSP? They're each certification.
The CPEs.
Yeah, the CPEs they're called something else with the CEH. But yeah, putting in your paperwork to get your CPEs and all of that, that seemed to be the biggest inconvenience for you. Is that?
Yeah, but pretty much because what I do for a living is really, you know, generate CPEs. I mean, I speak all the time. I write reports. I read reports, you know, all of that is what I do all day long. And so it's not as if I would need to read, you know, a bunch of magazine articles and file those. It's just something that I never, ever think about unless I get one of those reminder emails to file my CPEs. And I just think, why?
Well, Joe, you have a CISSP, and Grex, I think you have one too. Is that
yes.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are your feelings on keeping up with the CPEs and everything else? What are your feelings on, do you think that it's added value to your careers?
Initially, it did. I started going after my CISSP in 98. Which required you to really do work, which was reading the 40-plus books, outlining the 40-plus books, and preparing to take the test from there. But now that there's so many quick guides and other things, people don't get a chance to read, you know, all the books that are required. They don't get the background. They don't get the, you know, they don't get the context. They don't go and read the 30 documents required by NIST, or the, you know, the 16 Army documents for physical security or things like that. That doesn't occur anymore. Now it's, you know, jump into a classroom, take a week's worth of information, take the test and forget everything you know, and take a bigger paycheck.
Grex, what do you think?
Well, I think, I don't know, just my comment on CPEs in general is that if I would record everything that I did, I would have like a 1,000 hours like every month. So, like, I guess to me, I don't think the CBEs are a huge thing to maintain. I think it's interesting that they – I hear lots of complaints that, we have trouble maintaining our CPEs, and I'm just – I can't fathom that there are people that are in that boat.
Well, Grex, you're like the hardest working man in InfoSec. I mean, I see you everywhere.
Ooh,
you're
can doing... I add that to my to my bio?
You are involved in a lot of things, and I wonder how much of it is it so much maintaining the CPEs or the paperwork associated with the CPEs?
Yeah,
because we all hate paperwork.
Right.
I mean, see, that's the thing. I don't think it's that huge of a deal, because maybe, you know, 15 minutes twice a year, you know, I spend doing it. You know, I'll just add in, I went to, you know, ShmooCon, I went to DEF CON, and it's like, all right, that's 3 days, approximately, you know, 8 hours a day. That's like, you know, and I'll just add those in. And you do a few of those things, you know, and you go to some B-sides and, you listen to some podcasts while you're commuting, and it's, you know, it's a piece of cake.
Oh, wait a second. Can you get CPEs for my podcast?
Yes, yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, attention, everyone. I just want to make a plug. If you need CPEs, please remember, listen to Healthy Paranoia.
Let's speak really slowly so you can get, like, you know, double the CPEs, like 2 hours.
I was just going to pick up on a point there, right? One of the interesting things is that, you know, I made my point that CISSP has not very esteemed by most people. It's still an essential, right? But it's not held in such value that if it was really value, you would not resent spending a half an hour twice a year to fill out that form. You would make sure that you did it and you would want to do that. But in truth, the CISSP certification is such a trivial and valueless thing that you resent wasting 15 minutes or half an hour twice a year. And that's the root of the problem, right?
So how do you really feel, Greg? Well, I mean, it's so different. It's such a different cert than the CCIE. I've been thinking about it.
CISSP is more like a CCNA, not a CCIE.
Right.
CCIE is like 800 to 1,200 hours of prep, you know, physical preparation in terms of lab time. And, you know, most people will fail the exam two or three times. It's a different sort of a thing. So, you know, don't pitch an MBA versus a high school certification, which is sort of the difference here.
Yeah, I would agree with that, or you know, maybe a 4-year, degree of some kind, you know, bachelor's. It's great. Yes, it costs a lot of money to do it. You have to put in the work. But once it's done, 10, 20 years down the line, you can't go running around going, well, I have a BA, and asserting that as, you know, anything, you know, beyond this is what you did 20 years ago, and that was very nice, and that might have been, you know, a minimal qualification. But it's not an ongoing thing the way, you know, a CCIE is.
Do you think the traction that the CISSP has gained came from the government requirement?
Definitely, yeah. I mean,
yes.
But also if you look at ISC squared, I mean, they've invested a lot of time and resources, whether that was, you know, for them to whether that was right for them to spend time doing that or making the cert better, but they spent a lot of time working with the government so that the government would accept that as some sort of minimal knowledge sort of verification.
How does it work? Joe, and you and Grex can probably speak to this, being govy guys. So in DOD 8570, that's a matrix of required, I think it's required certifications, is that right? Or acceptable certifications for that a certain percentage of staff or contractors have to have that? Is that how that works?
It's based on your role within the organization and what your role is and your regular tasks are. Within an organization. In other words, if you are a desktop support person that's responsible for security, you may have to get your Microsoft certification, plus you may have to have your Security Plus. And then it builds on that for CISSPs, being the basic for understanding, but then there's very specialized certifications that you have to have in addition to that, things like Certified Ethical Hacker, Forensics, and all the other specialties. I do want to make a point. I provided a link. ISC Square did something very interesting to hand to the business community and the HR community. They wrote a document that they've gotten out to almost everybody, which actually shows the value of the CISSP, which I have not seen the same type of document being circulated for any of the other security certifications or even the technical certifications, which seem to help these people know how to hire. So therefore, now people know how to hire for a CISSP, as an example.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, it has a set of checklists and ideas and keywords that you want.
Yes,
business people.
Yeah, and you can say terrible things about checklists, but I agree that in government they're absolutely necessary. because, and I can speak to this from having hired for state government, if you're worried about being sued all the time by people you don't hire, you really have to get very, very concrete and transparent and checklisty about the requirements you have for a position so that you can demonstrate that the person you hired met everything in that specification and the person you didn't hire did not, so that you can defend it. And so this leads to all sorts of weighted matrices of skills and particular vocabulary being used. And this is why I recommend that if you are applying for this sort of job, that you use in your resume exactly the same words that are in the job posting, because then the person can say, yes, you know, I asked for Ubuntu experience, and yes, I know this other person put Linux, but this other person put Ubuntu, and that's why I chose him or her instead. And it's very sad that we have to do it this way, but this is where something like a certification comes in handy. It's certainly not enough, but it's one of the reasons why you have to fall back on a checklist in certain industries when you're hiring.
So do you think this is, you know, there was some more controversy that came from your post. There was, or maybe it's just related to it. I know there was an article by Brian Honan about professionalizing information security, and then there was a response from a guy named Shackelford about, you know, no, it's not time to professionalize security. So what do you think about it? Did you read either of those articles, anyone? What did people think of those?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, I responded to Brian's as well, except I did it on our 451 information security blog.
Okay. I'll have to look that up.
I'll send you a link to it.
Great. So what did what did you say? Yeah, if you could.
you want me to read it for you?
Oh, wait a minute. No, you have to give us the link so that we can send all the traffic that way, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Let me say, and basically, at that point, I was not interested in fanning any more flames around my personal blog post. I just wanted to, go along the same lines as what Brian was talking about, which was the general professionalization about security. And one of the things that I wanted to highlight in that post was the difference between validating somebody's knowledge and validating the quality of their work. And I think a CISSP can validate somebody's knowledge quite well. The problem is that we can't even agree on what constitutes good security. So we cannot say that having a particular validated level of knowledge means you're going to do a good job securing an organization. So I think that's a really big gap that we have.
Well, kind of in just what you were saying there, one of the things that sort of annoys me about CISSP is that if you don't have any like a master's or anything like that, you have to have, you know, 5 years of work, of on-the-job work experience. And they're very lenient about that because it doesn't have to be direct security experience. It could just be, you know, just in one of the 10 areas, which may or may not involve doing security things. And I wish they were a little bit more strict on that 5 years. And I wish it was, you know, 5 years doing security stuff.
I think that
being able to fudge around it.
Well, you know, I think maybe when that came out, it might have been harder. I mean, in 1998, for example, when Joe got his CISSP and 2000, when I started seeing more CISSPs, I mean, they didn't have a lot of specific security roles. And now there's a plethora of them, right?
Right.
So maybe
That's an improvement that I think that they could make now. Now, of course, ISC, they say, quote, make more money by making it easy. so, you know, I, you know, they may or may not want to go that route because it would be less revenue for them. But they are a nonprofit, but it does cost a lot of money to run that org.
Well, let's assume that, let's start by assuming everyone has the best of intentions, because you know, if you try to create a any kind of certification, I'm sure you'll run into the same things, and we're not privy to all the discussions that they had while creating this. So, you know, assuming that everybody is trying their best and they're trying to come up with a good certification, I think for a specific purpose, the CISSP is just fine. It's just that it's not as broadly applicable as, let's say, an apprentice journeyman master, you know, sort of thing with a tradecraft, for example.
Okay, yeah. My problem with the CISSP is that it's fundamentally a tech college. You know, like if you want to become a plumber, you go through an apprenticeship process. You spend 4 years as an apprentice to learn basic competency. This is the right end of a hammer. This is the dangerous end of a screwdriver. This is what a pipe looks like. And then they back that up with some technical college work. I regard the CISSP as fundamentally apprentice-level certifications, and the mistake that the ISC2 have made, in my view, is they haven't stepped up to create advanced certifications that put the value of the CISSP into perspective. Now,
well, they do have the engineering and the architect certs on top of that, though.
But I haven't – are there a lot of people who have those?
Well, the interesting thing – and, Joe, you can correct me if I'm – wrong, because I haven't looked at DoD 8570 in a few years, but now they actually, for some of the higher level, for management positions, they actually require as part of 8570 those higher level certifications.
I know the SISM is on there, right? The SISM is on
there. Mm-hmm. It's equivalent to the CISSP at that point for a manager. I think one of the big things that I've recognized over the time is the CBK, which is the Common Body of Knowledge, has not really expanded or been upgraded or updated over the years. And therefore, the knowledge itself hasn't been upgraded, requiring people that are coming in new to deal with today's problems, not yesterday's problems. Mm-hmm. I found a quote from Richard Baylick that the CISSP CBK looks barely acceptable on the surface, but in practice, it fails miserably to reflect issues security professionals actually handle. And that was back in June 2005.
And thus spake the Baylick. So
there you go.
I don't want to bake the Baylick.
Well, I'm kind of curious. So, Jay, you and I, and I guess Greg too, don't have CISSPs. So why, Jay, I know why I didn't get one, and I'll be happy to talk about it in a couple of minutes, but what rationale do you have for not getting the CISSP?
I come from the mind – can you hear me all right? Yeah, I come from the mindset of where I don't have to go to the school. I live it, you know, except for all that weird formulaic stuff, you know, when it puts things into perspective along with the business. Mm-hmm. But you know, I felt like, you know, early on in my career, and that mindset kind of stuck with me. You know, I do it for a living. I don't think I should, you know, be certified for it.
So what's a typical day for you? What do you mostly – do you focus on pen testing, vulnerability assessment? What's your normal work day like?
Right now I do audit and assessment.
Okay.
So it's much different than your typical information security guy, analyst, / pen tester, wannabe guy. Mm-hmm. But before, in previous jobs, I was doing things like, you know, assessing networks and operating systems and web applications and things like that. So I was living the life, you know, of a guy who does that for a living anyway. I felt like, well, I don't have to do this. But, you know, as I found myself hitting the bricks on occasion, like I mentioned earlier, over the past few years, I was just a little bit more motivated to look into it a little bit more in depth as to break down that initial barrier into some of the firms that I was wanting to get into. Mm-hmm. You know, barring any kind of really super experience that a lot of guys have, you know, of contributing to open source projects or being leaders in the field. Mm-hmm. You know, so my perspective was to kind of, all right, well, since I'm sitting at home right now, and a lot of these hiring managers looking for SSP guys, you know, maybe I should really think about that. You know, I even started studying for it in like about 2000. Mm-hmm. But my son was born, so that kind of put that on the back burner.
Yeah, you'll hear. So, it's funny when you hear people like Tom Hollingsworth. You know, the day to day of when he was preparing for CCIE, and he'd talk about, you know, like he had to. A lot of guys will have to sacrifice exercise or eating healthy.
Right.
And it's just, and I mean, frankly, I've studied on and off for the CISSP, and then I'll think about it, and I'll just, well, first of all, the length of time, the sit is 6 hours. And for a long time, it was only handwritten, and it wasn't computerized. So you could only take it at certain places, and you had to sit in a room. And, you know, I just thought, man, I'd rather be taking college classes and not, not IT classes either. You know, I'd take religion classes, or I actually did spend time in a computer forensics program like a year, but I just, you know, I felt like it was this weird kind of sort of checkbox. It was, I'm going to spend some time to get this ticket so I can get it punched by an HR person.
Right. Yeah.
It's a big checkbox for compliance. Realize that a lot of organizations use that as a checkbox, both for the commercial and the government side. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to have so many CISSPs on site to meet my FISMA compliance or my Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. I have to show and prove that I have people that are qualified to do the work. So that's
qualified.
So yeah, the challenge that you have is that in security is that there's so many charlatans, right? People who front you. You know, you pointed out earlier, you said, well, I live it, okay? I believe you because you're out there in public talking, you know, giving presentations and speak and making it happen. But for every one person who's highly visible, there's 5,000 people who can just front up and say, hey, I live it too, and I'm smarter, at least as smart as this guy, if not better. And you've got no way of validating that. Agreed. The challenge that the security industry's got is that there's so many people who are just full of crap about security and getting away with it because there's no – the security, especially in IT security, they haven't glommed around a core set of things. Like we have these standards, but the standards are idiotic. You know, they don't outline anything but more or less advanced common sense. PCI is a running joke in the industry.
I
right?
was just going to say, do you think the CISSP is like the PCI of
Yeah, I mean, we have to comply with PCI. I actually have to wind my security policy back to get PCI compliance. Do you know what I mean? In most sites that I've worked for, that's not an advance. That's a backstep. The security, and I've said this before, Michelle, and I'm going to get my little unicorn out, and I'm riding my little unicorn hobby horse right around the room now, right? But the security industry, the IT security industry is just, it's a disaster area. They can't agree on strategies. The standards all conflict. Everything comes down to the only thing that we can deliver at the end of the day is that security is a process. I mean, that's not a feature. That's a bug. If the best you can come up with for IT security is that security is a process, that's admitting that you don't know enough or can't build a set of tools or capabilities to define that it's more than a process. You're just like saying, I'm going to go to school and sit in class and I'll learn something.
Okay, Greg.
Well, I've got to respond.
I've got to respond to that. I've been in security a long time, and I've had lots of sales guys, business guys, tech guys standing in front of me making claims that their products will do this and that. So I spent a lot of time getting my Cisco certs, my Microsoft, everything else. And I realized that there's so many things missing because from a business standpoint, a business case, the vendors really don't care about security. They use it as a – especially, you know, 5, 6 and past that years ago. Today they're a lot better. But it's real common for the vendors to claim – well, as an example, Cisco re-enabled router header 0 for 2 years after they had turned it off. And we brought it up to them, and they said, no, it's okay. Nobody's, you know, it's not going to impact anybody. We saw the same thing. We saw vulnerability that sat in Microsoft for 13 years that, you know, myself and others have disclosed to them, they didn't kind of see that that was all that important. So I gave up saying the technology would actually solve the world. And I actually figured, hey, maybe I would train people for a while, you know, maybe educating people how to do it right and, you know, what the base concept. Well, that kind of failed because professors don't get paid very much. And there's a lot of expectations on that. And, yeah, that didn't work. So then I said, huh, processes. Yeah, processes would be the thing. So I went on this rampage. Oh, yeah, by the way, the people stuff, that's where I learned how to social engineer and hack processes and organizations. And the technology is when I really got to ask questions of technology and how to break that, you know, standard configurations and default protocols and such. Then I went into the processes and I got my the two NSA certifications, the ISO 1779. I went after all these a Six Sigma and, you know, IACMM and SSECMN. I realized the processes were broke too and they had major holes. So, you know, I'm standing back going through this whole process and going, hey, there's so much vendor influence in a lot of these things. As an example, you brought up Nat earlier. I don't know how many times I walk in to provide a brief on IPv6 security and how to think about IPv6 differently than IPv4. And how many times I walk in and the first thing I hear from the newly minted CISSPs is, Nat, can't have it. Got to have Nat. Got to have Nat.
Yeah, good grief. Well,
see, Joe, now you bring up a lot of great points there, and you spent obviously a lot of years experimenting with different ways to make security more successful. I mean, personally, I think it's maybe like it isn't one thing. I mean, it's maybe a combination of all those things that you talked about that's going to make a difference.
I mean, the problem for me is with the exception of the people on this call and maybe a handful of other people I've met in the industry, on the whole, I haven't been all that impressed with the CISSPs that I've met. Mm-hmm. And that's the horrifying part to me. And when they're bad, they're not just, you know, they're a little mediocre. I mean, I had a CISSP once ask me what the IP address was for a fully qualified domain name. And I remember turning to my manager and saying, you know, is it worth telling this person about NSLookup or God forbid, Dig? I mean, is it worth like showing her how to do that? And he just went, just give her the information.
NSLookup was not on the exam. It was not on the exam.
I see that, and that's the scary part. And I think that's the part Greg is getting to as well. That, you know, it doesn't really great. It's not on the exam, so it's not in the realm of what a CISSP should know.
Well, see, I mean, and I think that gets back to my point that, you know, that 5-year period that's required to get a CISSP, that really needs to be more like an apprenticeship, you know, that you hook up with somebody and they're your mentor through getting these experiences. And then actually getting those experiences in different areas, then doing some sort of CISSP thing as, you know, you could do the week boot camp, but that's just more of a test to, like a training to how to take the test.
Right.
But, I mean, like, I think you need to have people sign off on, you know, not just one, but several folks, you know, with each of the pieces of experience that you submit, you know, you need to have people sign off on that. Just doing it, a multiple choice test, I think, is there's just no value because you can basically study for it. I think if instead you require, you know, 10 folks to validate that this person knows their stuff, then at least that, you know, gives you like some real validation. I mean, maybe the CISSP
it falls down when you work at a top secret institution that doesn't have 10 people who work for them, and you're not allowed to be known outside of that organization.
Well, but you have 5 years, so you know you don't always have to be in a.
Well, yeah, it's a challenging one, right? That because there's two sides to this. One is a lot of what happens in security is meant to be secret. People actually think that security is about secrecy, which is actually a fallacy. mm-hmm. in the sense that there is information that needs to be kept secret, but the process by which you go about security, that's that process thing, should be publicly available in pre-described or prescribed methodologies for stuff. And I think mm-hmm. that people also need to recognize that IT security is not one discipline, it's actually many. There's mm-hmm. developer yeah. security, you know, mm-hmm. code security.
I mean, like infrastructure back in the day, you had one, you know, yes, I'm a security person, right? But now it's, you know, you can't just be like, you have forensics and you have like web app security and coding.
You have engineers, you have like the pen tester guy, you have the assessment guy, the audit assessment guy. I mean, it amazes me. I was thinking about it the other day and having a conversation with somebody. Oh, you know, that's not my, I don't do malware analysis. That's not what I've done in the past. It's turning into such little, very highly, you know, specific things, right? I agree with you.
One of the interesting things is a while ago I was having dinner with a group of guys and gals, but one of the people at the table, total rock star, right? But a few of us started talking about like federal government, like 8570.1 and CNA and things like that. And this person who I totally looked up to was a rock star. I mean, I was like, they knew nothing of what we were talking about. And, you know, they were in a different specialty, but that really shows just how diverse security is right now.
Yeah, we're so far apart now that people can stand up and say, well, if you've never written an exploit, then you're not really a security person. That's how balkanized it's possible to get these days. Yeah, but the big question is, you know, I mean, like, Grex, if I were to ask you to validate, you know, my level of knowledge, let's say you were, you know, somebody was looking to hire me and they went to you and said, well, you know her. Does she know what she's talking about? How would you quantify that, or how would you specify that?
Well, there is no – I mean, it's more qualitative, or I think, unfortunately, it would be more subjective, although I know that the issue with that is lawsuits and things, but I think that's – like, you're really going to get the best people that way, personally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but you wouldn't be able to say more than, well, you know, she writes a good blog post. You know, no, I've never seen it, you know, with her hands on a keyboard or.
I mean, like I wouldn't necessarily recommend you for, you know, doing, I don't know, like pen testing, you know.
Right, right. You've never seen me do anything.
If it was, you know, something that involves like doing security engineering type stuff, then I would definitely say, yeah, she writes well. This would be an excellent. She's been in industry for. You know, since she was 10, so she's been in the industry for about 30 years now, you know, and she knows her, like all that high level stuff, and that she'd make a great security engineer. I wouldn't recommend you to, you know, do a pen test per se. I mean,
I can see it now. Wendy Nather submits this following podcast for her resume. As a reference.
Because Grex said I was awesome. Well, no, actually, he didn't even say that. There's going to be gradations of, well, I think she, maybe engineer, you know, talks a good game, definitely not pen test level. This is the problem that we have is that, you know, I think if you really try to do this for real, what you end up with is a certification.
Yeah. I mean, then you have the other security certs, right? You have CEH and some of the SANS certifications. I mean, and then CEH has had a lot of controversy lately. They're citing
I'm going to go for my Grex Plus certification. That's what I'm going to do next.
I mean, that ultimately is the challenge, is how do you build a certification that everybody respects? So I remember talking to the program managers at Cisco about their certifications and how – this came out of a different discussion, and how they – and I'm talking about Cisco because that's the only one where I've actually spoken to the training people about how they develop their programs and their materials and their processes. And they elected to go with the exam format because how do you actually validate somebody's – how do you say
you're working in the industry. If you ask people to just come to a website and click a button saying, yes, I'm doing something, you can't validate that. You can't apply enough people.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
You can't apply enough people to build that process. So how is the CISSP people, like how is this ISSC validating that whatever you say, you know?
Yeah.
Pull my trousers up, you know, is that your 2 hours of whatever it is this week? You know, that process itself is, you know, just open to abuse and devalues the certification. So really, the only way you can do it is to tell them to come back into the exam hall and charge them $300 to front up for an exam. Now, you can't do much about the price of the exams, except if we had more volume worldwide, we potentially could get a better process.
I mean, what does everybody think of the boot camps? You guys have seen the boot camps and all of that. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think the boot camps are good in terms of prepping to study for the test, but I still think you need, that 5-year experience mark. Those need to be 5 years doing security stuff with people behind or with people validating that experience.
Or, I heard that as five-year experience, and I was all in favor of that.
Yeah, I actually have a friend, a good friend, who teaches boot camps. He teaches CEH, he teaches CISSP, CISM. I mean, his classes are great, but I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I don't get the impression that you're gonna just sail in and sail out. But I mean, maybe some people do.
No, the boot camps are definitely hard, but like I've worked with a lot of senior folks that have been doing security for years and years and years, and it's more or less, all right, I'm signed up for – I mean, they know their stuff, and they're signing up to the boot camp just to basically prep for the test, how the questions are asked, maybe fill some of those gaps that they don't have experiences in, and I think it's great for those purposes, but it shouldn't be used as – oh, I sort of fudged 3 to 5 years experience, and now I'm going to take a boot camp and, you know, and pass it. And I just think that that's a, you know, then you get those CISSPs that are asking those questions, you know, how do you map an IP to a domain?
So, I mean, what would you do if you guys were all hiring? And at some point, I'm sure in some of your careers, you've either been part of the hiring process or you have been somebody who hires, been responsible for hiring somebody. I mean, what did the CISSP mean to you when you saw it on somebody's resume?
I mean, I think actually, CISSP. Okay. Go, Wendy. Ladies first.
I was just going to say that I've done a lot of hiring, and the again, I'll get in trouble for saying this. I just know it. But the CISSP doesn't tell me much about a candidate except about how important he or she thinks it is. So if they put it like all over their email signature, then I know that, oh boy, you know, this is somebody who really thinks this is hot stuff. I better, you know, look at them more closely. So for what that's worth.
I know. I love how you make – because I actually worked with a guy once who – He was cert crazy. That was really funny. He had like 10 certs after his name on his email signature.
Yeah.
Certification junkies. I love them.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I remember, and he put down that he had passed, and this just makes me laugh. He had some of the people who put down CCIE written. That they haven't passed the full CCIE, but they put down that they've passed the written.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's kind of one of the interesting things that I'd like to bring up too, and I don't know if they offer it anymore, but ISC Squared had their associate, you know, there's CSSP associate, and there's like the S, I don't know, there was one that was 4 letters, and it was for those getting into security. And I mean, getting back to the kind of what I'm pushing for is, you know, I think that's great to get, you know, somebody to come in, study the basics, get the CISSP associate, and then use those connections that they make there to, you know, get the 5 years experience. But I don't know. I mean, to me, there was, like I said, there's the associate CSSP, and then there's also the that it was like SSCP or something like that. I don't really know what – I haven't followed up with them. I don't know what has happened to them.
So, Joe, what do you think? What are your opinions? When you see CISSP on a resume, what's your thought?
Oh, I asked several questions, a lot more granular. Things like, so did you pay for it or did your employer pay for it? And what have you done since? And what conferences have you actually spoken at or attended to contribute back to your certification? And I ask these questions, and most of these people go, yeah, I passed a test. And that's when I get really concerned. And it's funny because I'm always out looking for I always have people show up to ask me to mentor them. And it's interesting going through the process of having them understand this is a profession. This is basically you have to make a commitment and your employer makes a commitment. You can't just go to Black Hat because, you know, it's great, or RSA because it's great parties and you're, you know, going to get paid to do it. You know, you have to come back with something. You have to come back with some knowledge. You have to come back. You have to have learned something.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's a big thing that I deal with all the time.
Yeah, I agree. You know, people ask me sometimes, how was the conference? Did you have fun? And I think there is nothing fun about a conference because I'm there working my butt off. You know, I mean,
I thought that was just me.
No, I mean, well, and Wendy, both of us at RSA Security Conference. I mean, if you're speaking, then you're nervous about speaking, or you're still prepping, maybe you're rehearsing because it's running short or running long. And then people, you want to talk to people, you want to network, or if Stephen Foskett happens to be there, then he may, you know, he's going to pin you down and do some kind of recording with you as well. I mean, it's work, and I agree, Joe. There are too many, I think, passive individuals in the industry, and I think it's funny when you said that people ask you to mentor them. I immediately started thinking of John Carpenter movies and Sam Raimi horror films. I can't imagine that would be. Do they know what they're getting into when they ask you that?
Yes. Usually, I go through a whole process of what they want to be in their career, and it's funny because after 3-4 years, they'll come back and they say, "Okay, well, now I want to change and I want to go this way. How do I do it? Where do I go? What are the people I need to learn about? What are the people that I need to know? You know, what is it that I need to do to become the professional at this person's level?" And it's really fun to watch, you know, people that were unknown years ago that are now well known in the community doing some amazing things. And, you know, it's kind of fun to be able to call them and go, "Hey, I don't know about that topic because you're really deep about this topic."
You know, Greg, maybe that's that could be an interesting component. So you get the 5 years to become the CISSP, and then once you have a CISSP, maybe something more worthwhile than CPEs would be mentoring other professionals and validating that you mentored people and that you actually made those kinds of professional efforts to give back to the community. I mean, I think that could be more valuable.
That's the thing. I mean, the ISC squared, I mean, they actually have a tough job because they have to, you know, they have to cater to the government or whoever is using them as a certification. They have to cater to all of us. And at least with us, there's two types of folks. There are people that love to work, and there are people that there are people who you know, just love their work and they love security. And then you have people that basically they just want a job, you know, 9 to 5.
Nine to
so
five.
You have to cater to those. I mean, and I'm not saying that's bad. I mean, like, I don't know. I almost envy them to a certain point because they can shut off their computers at 5 and, you know, they have this whole other life, you know. So you have to cater to both those folks, and there's a lot of people that, you know, don't want to make their use all their personal time to do things to contribute back to the community. So maybe there's like some two-phased, you know, sort of, or two levels of certification that you have, you know, the people that just want the 9-to-5 job, and you have the people that are very passionate about security, like most of us. And we definitely, it would be useful to have maybe like a higher certification or something like that that people like us could use.
I don't know. It's really hard. I mean, I don't know how to fix it.
This is why vendor certifications have been successful over the years, because at least they focus on a specific target. They can create a set of goals and build a curriculum that focuses in on those goals. Now, I'll freely admit that a vendor certification can become a shell. It can become self-serving and self-supporting, but at least the certifications and the credibility that attaches to them transits from an organization which is trustworthy, right? But when I look at an organization like ISSC, like this ISC people, or the Certified Ethical Hacker, or any of these organizations, they all look like comedy clowns chasing after a buck and horse around a bloody rodeo ring, right? They don't strike me as people of any great confidence.
Tell us how you really feel.
What are you getting at? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, they don't have the credibility to be able to create a certification that validates a person's experience. And that is the challenge for them, is to build a certification that people respect. And that means making it hard. But if you make it hard, then people don't want to go and do it. Right, so you have to have some sort of driver, and this idea of attaching to the American, you know, to the governments, and saying you must have this certification to be able to do this is a starting point, because it starts to create some momentum around it. But where's the rest of the security professionals getting behind these certifications to raise themselves up? And I'm going to come back to this. You know, I live it, therefore I'm not going to do it. That's kind of shallow, right? I don't believe in certifications much easier either, but they do create certain things, right? They create, they build a credibility for the industry that you work in. They create value for the whole ecosystem. It drags all of the people at the bottom and makes them float at least 2 inches off the bottom of the pit at the bottom. You know, in the same way that we send carpentry apprentices and plumbers apprentices off to college to do some basic maths and basic business administration, which has improved the professionalism of, you know, those types of professionals, blue collar workers, through the roof. Security needs to get its house in order with that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, maybe sort of a sports analogy is, you know, whether, you know, basketball or football or whatever, but if you want to play, you know, you got to play by the rules, and you got to play like on the basketball court or the football field. You know, you can be the greatest football player ever, but if you never get on the football field and prove that, you know, so I think what I'm trying to say is, you know, our industry has certain rules, and in order to, or guidelines or whatever you want to call them, in order to be in our industry and be successful, you have to kind of play within those guidelines. And unfortunately, part of that is, well, not unfortunately, but you can take it or leave it, but you know, certification is part of that. There are tons of other aspects to it, you know, whether it be education, experience, training, and then also just communication too. You know, there are a lot of different aspects that makes a good security person good, and certifications is just one small part of that. I mean, in getting back to your interview question earlier, you know, you have to take that balanced approach and look at all those things in order to find the right folks.
So, Wendy, what have you finally decided? Are you going to renew it or not?
Oh, no, no, I've decided not to renew it. And
definitely, okay.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, like I said, it's fine for, you know, certain areas of the industry. Maybe I'm just too tired and cranky. Maybe it's, you know, there may be a whole new generation of InfoSec professionals that believe in the certifications, who say, you know, who will, you know, grow up in a world where, you know, this is what you do. Of course you get your certifications. But for some of us who, you know, started out when there wasn't any formal security training program of any kind, you know, maybe we're just too set in our ways and, you know, we still want to believe that we're all individual snowflakes and we're all wonderful and knowledgeable and we don't want to conform. So, you know, maybe that's it.
Joe, what
let
do you
me bring a new let me bring a new term to it. We actually have two different groups. We have cybersecurity factory workers, which are not the 9-to-5 community.
Nice.
Which we really essentially that's what we have. I mean, we've gone from a set of professions. I mean, my God, I remember how excited I was when Satan came out so that I didn't have to write all the code to do all the testing. I mean, I was really excited about that. Okay, what a geek. But, you know, even bringing up this particular topic of, you know, doing vulnerability scans as an example, which Grex, you deal with all the time. So many people don't even understand how it works. They don't understand the underlying issues. Therefore, they get so many false positives, and they report them to the customers, and then they slow the processes that cause all these other problems. But, you know, that's what you would have with a factory worker. You have to have expertise that's over and above that factory worker. You have to have the real engineers, Greg. You have to have the people that actually know what the hell they're doing to actually say, yeah, okay, you turned the knob the wrong way. You know, you really let me teach you how to do this or to understand this particular concept, you know, from a framework of what you're doing. The certifications right now, I also think they've gotten watered down, by the way. You know, there's over 80 certifications today.
Jeez.
And from a specialty standpoint, at one point I sat down and started defining. Yeah, cybersecurity.
In security, there's 80 certifications. Wow.
Holy yeah. Toledo. That's really?
That's basically that waters it down.
Does that count the April Fool's one that I created 2 years ago?
What?
No, otherwise it would have been 81.
No. I don't remember this. Tell me about this, Grex.
It was the CNIP, and it's the Certified Nova InfoSec Professional.
I was thinking of the application security specialist.
I have that
certification. I'm not giving that one up.
Yeah, I would love that one. Can you get me that one, Wendy?
Oh, you just have to send an email to the right person, and you'll get one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have that. So,
yeah,
Greg,
as valuable as a CISSP, then.
So, I think Greg should have one. We got to get Greg that certification. If he has one, he's got to have one security certification.
Everyone should have one security certification.
The root of my complete loathing for CISSP dates back to before the year 2000, sort of, or somewhere around about 2001, 2002. When I was working for a online company, and they decided that they needed to do a security audit of the company, and so what we did was they hired somebody who I knew to be a bit of a dill, but had a CISSP, and I said to them, you know, you are making a mistake. So what I did was I deliberately misconfigured the firewall. I left a port open with a page that said, yes, you found a vulnerability behind it. Right? Didn't take much of a scan, not too difficult, not on an odd port number, but, you know, it was like 8080 or something. I think it was even on just port 80, and it was like to see if they were doing a port scan. And so they went off and they did this thing. They came back with a six-figure audit fee and a report. And they the first page said, you failed the audit. And I looked at the logs for the honeypot that I'd put together, and they hadn't even scanned it. So they'd done no application scanning, no port scanning. They failed us on the fact that our building didn't have a key code on the main door downstairs, and the data center, the walls of the data center were made of glass so you could see through them to the servers.
No, really?
Yeah, really. That's the level of professionalism that CIS...
Good times.
The idea was that because they had a glass front on the server farm, this is a long time ago, right, when server farms were big wheels and, you know, dot-coms and all that, and everybody wanted to see it. But they failed this because they said people could come into your office and visit. Like, they couldn't get through the door. The doors were all secure. They weren't, you know, just off the street wander around like in Walmart or something. But they could see the... And then they could see what sort of servers we got, and therefore they could attack them. Right? So as long as it's CIS is picked out there with that level of competency, it can go and screw itself.
Yeah, I mean, so it was obviously much more than just an IT security audit. It was like
physical
security as well, too. So.
Well, that is the domain.
They didn't
even do the domain.
They didn't scan the firewall. They didn't test the application because we also put a trick in the application, put a vulnerability in the application. That was a honeypot to see. None of that. None of the real security stuff was done. All they did was wander around and said, yeah, we got you. We'll get you. Look, because glass, good, six figures, we're home and hosed. Off they went.
So that Greg has like a new title. Greg has a new title, CISSP Hater and Torturer.
How do I get contracts like that?
Yeah.
The six figure.
So I think to be fair, though, you know, we don't have anybody from the certification bodies on this podcast, and I do want to be fair to them by saying, you know, again, if you can't treat these organizations as a monolithic entity, they're made up of people, and we don't know what discussions are going on behind the scenes, and often. You know, if you go and sit down at the table with them and listen to what they're trying to do, you understand why things have turned out the way they have. So, you know, maybe if we were going to design a certification, assuming that one was needed, how would you do it?
Well, that's I mean, and I want to echo what Wendy said, too, is that, I mean, they have a hard job, you know, trying to create a certification that caters to a lot of different audiences. And a lot of times, you know, if like I've talked to folks that are creating the certs and things like that, and they actually, a lot of folks want the cert to be better, but for whatever reason, well, they can't, and they may be limited because of like laws or regulations or fear of being sued. So they have to kind of really water it down and make it, you know, the lowest common denominator for everybody.
Yeah,
it's a hard job.
I wouldn't think. Yeah, to be serious for a second, I think it is a tough job, especially. And then not only you have to make it international as well. So
yeah,
you've got also to deal with cultural and language differences too. So, yeah, I think it's. I don't think it's easy. I don't think it's a trivial thing to do. As you know, and you know, I keep going back to the CCIE. I think that's. This sets the bar at one of the hardest certs out there, and you know, for the lab component and being, you know, a time management as well as intelligence kind of test. I don't know, maybe the addition of a lab component, the addition of mentorship. I mean, it's tough. I don't envy them their task. Mm.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think you could mandate, for example, mentorship at all, because it's that's a very tricky thing. I mean, I could go and say, oh, I'm going to be a mentor because I know so many wonderful things and I want to pass them on. And that would be terribly arrogant of me. And I may end up with people who are saying, you know, well, yeah, I had her as my mentor. You know, she bought the drinks. That was really nice. But, you know, that was it. So, you know, that mentorship and giving back to the community are things that. That assume that you have something to give back to the community, even after your CISSP. So, you know, I think certainly, you know, some types of engagement are important. But again, I think validating somebody's level of knowledge is different from creating an organization that furthers the cause of the industry. And, you know, as much as ISC Squared, you know, the board members, or at least some of them, believe that this is also about creating a community, that's great too, but I don't want to pay $80 to be in a community either. So these are two different sorts of goals, and maybe it makes more sense to separate them more and say, you know, we're going to go after this goal of knowledge and skill validation, and then we're going to do this community thing separately. I don't know. This was just something I was thinking about.
I think the whole experience on this podcast has left us with more questions than answers. I don't think any of us have any. Jay, we haven't heard from you in a while. I mean, do you have any ideas for what you think can be improved?
No, but I do like the concept of lab work, you know, you're taking theoretical things and making them practical, but then you're dealing with a finite set of problems to solve. Mm-hmm. So there's a lack of built-in flexibility with that. So you can't really go through the real-world scenario where a million things can go wrong and normally do during something problematic.
Yeah, it just goes to prove that you can find port 80 with both hands, you know, something like that.
Well, that's the thing. It would be really hard, I think, to put a practical in, because you would have to put kind of a practical for each domain, I guess. Yeah. And it would have to literally be like the lowest common denominator kind of deal where, you know, that would like one practical per domain, and each one would represent somehow the entirety of that.
God,
domain.
It could be like five times as expensive as the CCIE, which the CCIE is already really expensive. So,
well, it could be advanced classes, which is what we're seeing right now. They to get your gold certification or platinum, whatever they call it, you not only take the class and pass the test, but you also have to write a paper on some topic and have it approved and validated through whoever does that at SANS.
SANS certification?
The cost is an issue, though. I mean, a lot of people, you know, for somebody that's looking to get into InfoSec, you know, just even the minimal class, you know, you're spending, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 just for the class, and then you also have to pay for, depending where it is, hotel, food, all that.
I mean, about it's $6,000 to $7,000 is what it is for a week. Is what I've realized.
Yeah, that's pretty onerous, especially. Oh, I mean, if you just take a university.
It's
class.
More onerous than any other career choice. That's piffle, right? It's no more onerous than any other career choice. You think plumber who earns $25,000 a year who has to go off for 6 weeks to a college doesn't struggle to pay for his training too?
Yeah, but I think it maybe makes more sense to then you might as well just then buckle down and go get a master's. I mean, if it's, you know, if SANS is charging the same amount or more.
Sure.
You can get a master's through SANS.
How does the security industry build value into these certifications that investing that sort of time and money is worthwhile? Ultimately, you know, the vendors have shown that they can build. You know, the CCIE program doesn't stand alone. It's fully supported by a whole raft of other certifications that create a pyramid of value that support the uniqueness and the way it works, right? So the CCNA, the CCMP, and the CCIE, and all its various forms is just a demonstration of a whole ecosystem of value that's being delivered to customers. What the security industry has failed to do as a group of people, as an industry, is to converge around a single security certification process. And because you can't have it per vendor, right? Because you can't have a firewall vendor, or there's no one vendor in spaces. So you can't get leadership.
But see, there isn't – I mean, maybe 10, 15 years ago, you could have came up with one cert that we all could have gotten – around to, and maybe what I think ISC squared did the CSSP what in early 90s when it first came out, and maybe the CSSP was the result of that. But you know, in today's terms, I mean, you almost, you know, there's 50 different specialties within security, and you almost kind of need like
that's rubbish too, right? There's plenty of non-specialties
for each.
So I disagree with that too, but there's plenty of non-specialties, like networking itself has hundreds of specializations within it, you know.
Yeah.
Security is no different. And those industries have managed to create credible qualifications and certifications. The challenge is that security industry continues to act like a bunch of idiots as a general rule. Everybody wants to walk around with ponytails and thongs and pretend that they're, you know, attend these conferences with smelly people and be proud of the fact that they're all uniquely individual, right? Well, that's That's a childish attitude. That's where the Unix guys in the, you know, remember all the Unix guys from the 1980s who all got shot and sent to retirement in the early 2000s because they were a bunch of losers. You need the security industry to reflect that. And
you
to
know,
grow
tell
up
us.
From Shmoo Kong and Black Hat and act their age instead of their bloody shoe size.
Well, man, I want Greg on my next panel.
I know. I'm afraid to have any.
Wait. So are you a security person or not? I don't know. Or are you just saying the industry? Because you're
industry
more of
as a whole.
Right?
Yeah, the industry as a whole is still walking around like a bunch of cowboys pretending that they're grown-ups.
Yeah, but right, the industry
there are definitely
up with individuals. So I resent you classifying me like that.
No, I said the industry as a whole. I didn't say that everybody. And this is what I'm saying. There are pockets of comprehension and rationality within it. But as long as you still have – like I was talking to a security vendor the other day about coming onto Packet Pushers to promote their security product, right? And they said, why would I not – why would I come and spend the money on your networking podcast? So we have the Packet Pushers, which is the main networking podcast, has 10,000 listeners a show. And they said, we would rather go to Black Hat because – that's where all the security people go. And I just thought, you know, I'm not even going to have a rational discussion with you idiots, because if you think Black Hat is the people who buy firewalls, I'm not going to win. Black Hat people don't buy firewalls. They sit around and smell and have long hair and congratulate themselves with their ability to code. And
you know, that's what I was planning to do in August or July, definitely.
Really? You weren't going to, like, you were going to leave your deodorant at home?
Yeah. I was figuring out which deodorant to leave at home.
Okay.
First of all, I mean, I don't know. Have you ever been to Black Hat? Because Black Hat is actually the, you know, very, you know, costs like, what, $2,000-$3,000 to go there. I mean, it's mostly, you know, more.
Mostly
the
feds now, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the more professional one. Now, your description is coming a little bit closer with, say, DEF CON. But,
yeah.
But still, I think even DEF CON, I mean, there's more of what you describe, but I think it's mostly, professionals. You know,
yeah, actually, I think you're right, Grex. I think, and maybe that's the other thing too, is that security has become more professional. The people in security who are working in security, it's not so much that black t-shirt wearing, unbathed kind of person who sits in the corner and does some magic and then comes out and says, I broke it all. I mean, it's a different industry now.
Yeah, neckbeard not required.
That's maybe like 5% of the industry. I don't know.
I tend to agree with you, especially in this part of the country as well. In D.C., you can't really get away with that as much.
Maybe so, but everybody celebrates them. Everybody points to them. They're all big noting themselves, and everybody's paying attention to them, right? So while the security industry pays attention to them, that's the impression that it conveys. It loves celebrating mavericks and losers who can't conform in normal society. So you can't take the security industry seriously.
Oh, I love this. I love this.
Okay,
oh my
well,
God. I don't even know how to respond.
Actually, it's interesting because coming from working with the vendor community and understanding that they're all buttoned up, honestly, Greg, you should have been at DEF CON 9. You should have been at some of the cons that were back in the 90s. Yeah, that was smelly. early Unix stuff, but when we got to about 98, 99, people started wearing ties. It was very frightening. And we saw the Black Hat has pretty much been a professional group, just like RSA. Yeah, okay, a few people walk around in, you know, black t-shirts, whatever. Even DEF CON. I mean, DEF CON, it used to be telling stories about the crazy gags and things that would take place. Nothing takes place at DEF CON anymore. It's, you know.
I blame the feds. I blame the feds.
Well, they do. Well, they do jam cell phone coverage, or so that you can't tether your phone.
Yeah, but that's so, you know, 6 months ago, 6 years ago. I mean, that's not even interesting anymore. Come on.
Well, I think we've beaten this subject to death. I don't know that we have anything else to talk about shirts.
Actually, I want to add two things to the very end of the podcast. That is that the NSA has actually been thinking about this pretty heavily. and have created a group called NIETP, which is National IA Education and Training Programs, which are bachelor's and master's degrees that they've gone out and certified universities throughout the country and throughout the world to live up to that high-level certification that, Greg, that you were talking about. Also, SANS became certified, and they themselves have gone through that whole same process. They get you certified within this NSA domain also. So there are people thinking about, you know, hey, the certifications are nice, but we need people to do the hands-on, that understand the processes, that can get deep into things, but also can call, you know, bullshit on vendors when they come in and say, here's this magic red button. We'll solve everything by pressing it. It's great.
Oh, God.
Okay.
So
the vendors
I just
hate
want to mention
me.
That.
Yeah. Okay, now we've beaten it to death, right?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay.
Wait a minute. One more thing.
We have taken care of the checkbox. The checkbox is checked.
Yeah.
Okay, well then, if I think we've really talked this to death, and I'm happy that everybody was able to come in and contribute in a very healthy way, Greg.
Spleen vented.
Hey, it's Shakespeare, right?
Well, thanks for listening, dear players. 'Tis true that a good podcast needs no epilogue, yet good podcasts prove the better by the help of good epilogues, just as good networks are the better for good security. Please remember to follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers, consort with our listeners on IRC at Freenode, or joineth the LinkedIn group. Visit packetpushers.net to read blogs by the growing Packet Pushers players. Subscribe to our RSS feeds, join our band of merry men and women at the user forum, and donate to the show, because the costumes for podcast productions are quite expensive. Email your comments or questions about this show to packetpushers@gmail.com or healthyparanoia@packetpushers.net. And remember, it's healthy paranoia, because sometimes they really are out to get at you.
Exit stage left, pursued by a bear.
I'm leaving that in. Oh, my God. Oh, Wendy.